Hello, Catherine here. If you're listening to my podcast because you're a fan of wintering, the good news is that my new book, Enchantment, is available now. It's a book about how we can find a way to reconnect with a world that's sometimes hard to live in and even to find magic there. It's available in all good bookshops and please support your local indie if you can. For more information, you can go to catherine-may.com/enchantment. Happy reading.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi, I'm Catherine May. Welcome to the Wintering Sessions. As you can probably hear, I'm running a bath. I quite often, at the beginning of these podcasts, take you out for a walk. But today, I thought I would share my kind of rather secret afternoon ritual, which is that I quite often take a bath, like in the middle of the day. I find it really soothing. But also, quite often my work extends into the evening. You know, I'm often doing interviews in America, late into the evening. And so it's really easy for me to just carry on working right through to then, with like a little break to say hi to my son. And I quite often start at like 4:30 or 5 in the morning as well, because that's when I write the best. And so if I'm not careful, I can accidentally be working like 15-hour days without even meaning to. And so when I want to take a rest, I take a bath. I think it's probably eccentric to do that, but that's never bothered me before, for sure. And I do really get reset by sitting in hot water. It really clears my head and untangles all those weird thoughts that just get stuck sometimes. I find it really useful for creative work. But most of all, I've been working really hard to divorce the idea in my mind that my worth is linked to the amount of time I sit at my desk. I mean, honestly, it's just obviously not true for me and for what I do. The way I earn my living is in these weird fits and starts. It definitely isn't per hour. But of course, I grew up with the idea that, you know, you get paid by the hour. That is your value. And it's quite toxic, really, for me to believe that, because the longer I sit in front of my desk, quite often the less I end up doing. But I turn up anyway, because I feel guilty. I feel like my job isn't real. I feel like I'm not real half the time. I spend a lot of time alone. Anyway, so I'm running a bath. I thought I'd share that with you today. And I'm so excited for you to listen to this interview with Gemma Kearney. You can probably tell, but I loved talking to her. She's just like a little light bulb, I think. I love people like that. But I also think she had a really brilliant story to tell, and it wasn't the story I was expecting her to tell me. I was expecting her to tell me about the time after that, actually, when she moved up to Edinburgh, but we didn't get there. We didn't get time because she hijacked me with this really wonderful story of how it felt to be so alone in lockdown and living embedded in a cliff and swimming in the sea and dealing with all the terrible doubts that, and, you know, kind of sense of what next that loads of people in the arts and media felt at the beginning of lockdown, like not knowing if they'd have any work again and everything getting cancelled. And I'm sure that's relatable for lots of people who work outside of that field as well. I hope it is. But anyway, it was a brilliant conversation. I absolutely loved it and I didn't want it to stop. She's been such a kind of guiding voice, really, in culture for maybe people younger than me, hand on heart. Like, I'm not that down with the kids. I will own that. But she does way more than that. If you haven't come across her before, you're going to love her. If you have, you'll know what I mean. Anyway, enjoy hearing from Gemma and me, and I'll be back a bit later. Gemma, welcome to the Wintering Sessions. I'm so thrilled you agreed to talk to me today. It's really wonderful. I'm feeling a little bit intimidated by someone as competent as you are in recording things. And I, you know, just hope I can get away with being charmingly incompetent. Would that be all right?
I think that people seem to believe the smoke and mirrors that I put up, that I need everything to be super slick, supremely professional. Whereas really, I am at heart quite a DIY punk, and I'm absolutely fine with charming and incompetent. It's good.
It's a wonderful thing to have a reputation for like hard work and professionalism, and that's exactly what you have. Like, that's such a great thing to project out into the world, I think.
Ah, thanks. That means that it's worth it.
All that fronting is paying off.
I think I am a grafter.
Yeah.
And I think there are many reasons for it.
Would you like to shed light on those reasons?
I think that if you are a woman, that looks like me, I mean that in terms of my cultural identity, as well as like the way I choose to express myself, what I wear, how my body constantly changes and reacts to how I'm feeling or the world around me, where I'm at in terms of my endless curious discoveries of what it means to be alive and how I want to document that and frame it. I think that to be a grafter has been a true gift and kind of wrenched me through my growing up period, which I think has only just kind of slided a little bit.
Surely it carries on forever.
I think it definitely does. But the real painful bit, like the growing pains, I hope have calmed. But I always want to grow. And I think being a grafter is super interweaved into who I am. And it's been grafting my way out of adversity making decisions which might not be good for me, but not really knowing why, and just like keeping on going and working and working. And I think that if I put out into the world hard work and professionalism, then that's a really, really good thing. That's a great part of that like complicated obsession with work.
Well, but also like whenever I come across a grafter, like I'm a grafter too, and I just always see a person who's taking it seriously and who isn't complacent about what they've achieved and where they are in the world. And that's the way I always want to be.
I respect that.
Yeah, mutual respect.
Come on, I'm fist bumping. I first of all had my eyes closed, so I thought it'd be a nice serene way to do this interview, but you charged me up, Catherine.
You've opened your eyes accidentally.
Here I go.
I love it.
That's not very wintering of me.
That's so good. Well, now you're all charged up. But you, like, you started in this world really young as well, didn't you? I mean, like, you had your first success at, like, what, 23 or something like that?
Yeah.
So young.
I got my first job at the BBC when I was a child.
Wow. What was that like?
It is everything that you would imagine it to be. It's a roller coaster with so much beautiful high times and excitement and thrill and exhilaration for having the dream job when you still got that incredible resilience and robust energy and love for life and living and meeting new people. And there I was in the center, in the core of fun, amazing, youth culture, music, gigs, parties, fashion. It was incredible.
Yeah. Was it hard as well, or was it just incredible?
Definitely it was hard.
Yeah.
I think if you'd asked me then, I felt so thankful because it was so unexpected that I might not have said it was hard because I wouldn't have wanted to admit that it was.
Yeah.
For me, I was made to feel by myself and from the world that I was in, the industry side of it, to feel super grateful. And I was. Yeah. I rode out on that gratefulness for years. I was just so excited, like an excitable puppy. So it does a lot, though. It, like, keeps you moving in momentum so that even some of the harder stuff, like you say, was it hard? Yes, like crazy hours. I was doing breakfast radio for years. Different time slots. So I'd be given a call by a boss and told, we're going to move your show to this, and you don't really get that much choice. And your lifestyle is changing all of the time, and it's not necessarily in your hands, but you are really thankful. I guess it's kind of gratitude personified.
Yeah,
and it does actually help the hardness of it all, or an injustice, or something super unfair or cruel even, you know, like there are all those bits attached to being suddenly in the public eye, to like serving something that is systemically very patriarchal. There are issues with racism and sexism daily. You know, there's so many hard things that were experienced.
Yeah. And it's always in your face.
Yeah. But the momentum and the thrill and the joy. And I feel like that's very youthful as well. Like my, like being 23 and having a great gaggle of friends and just having this optimism about life, it actually helps some of those harder bits like roll off in the rain. Like it goes, it doesn't mean it doesn't affect you. And sometimes it comes and creeps up on you a bit later, which I think it did for me, but it was hard. But did I feel like it was hard? Not necessarily, because I was so into the moment. I was so momentously excited. And most of the moments that I was experiencing were joyful and a privilege. Yeah. And I knew that.
I don't think everyone would have that perspective, though, you know? Like, I think, I mean, you're clearly an optimist, and you're clearly someone that finds the positive in the whole world. Like whatever comes at you, you're going to find the good stuff from it. And what I hear from a lot of people is, you know, a fixation on the bad side of experience and without that counterbalancing happy side. And that is definitely a mindset, I think.
Yes. And on analysation, which I have given myself time to do, it is it's a weighty investigation, because I'm only like that, essentially. I'm only super optimistic or know how to spring myself into the light.
Yeah.
Because I've had to do that to survive. And that goes back to the day I was born. I honestly, sometimes I have to like move on with the subject, because I think that I've been doing that my whole life. Like from the day I was born into bereavement. Like my mum had lost her mum while she was pregnant.
Oh, wow.
We had to essentially, and I don't want to make it sound like overly dramatic or sensationalized or overshare, but we had to get out of an unsafe situation in the house that I was in when I was a baby. There's so many things that could so easily crumple my sort of spirit, which is a really like rebounding one, that I think I've honestly been an eternal optimist since the day I was born. Yeah, I've had to be like that to survive, which when you break down is potentially a bit sad. And then I've had to learn to genuinely grieve or go through the process of accepting a responsibility, all of that kind of quite hard to define sometimes.
Yeah.
Stuff, let's say.
I know exactly what you mean, because I was talking to a friend yesterday about like, I'm having to learn not to scramble, you know, like scrambling is what I've always done and hustling, you know, like that is my default mode. And there comes a point when you have to deliberately not do that in order to make enough space to think and reflect and to actually do what you're doing properly and to develop as a, like for me as a writer, you know. But it really is a hard skill to unlearn sometimes, even though that scrambling is one of my key skills, you know, and I can get my way out of anything. I also know that it's not always the right thing to do, that sometimes you have to do stuff a bit slower and you have to take the hard way around and you have to make room for the learning that you need to do, I think.
And I think to learn the virtues of time can only be learned over time.
Yeah, I know.
You couldn't tell me that age 23.
No.
I had way too many fun things to distract myself with. And good for me, good for little me. I was up for it. I was loving going for meetings, coming up with ideas, thinking about what shoes I was going to wear to an awards ceremony, preparing for an interview with Whoopi Goldberg the next morning, co-presenting with an idol of mine, Trevor Nelson. It was an amazing playground. It was an assault course in a way, you know, like an adventure, like physically, mentally, etc. It was wild and it was hard. I would love to go back to myself and tell myself to learn how to eat properly and that yoga will become my best friend rather than dabbling with it because I had a hangover sometimes. You know, there's all these things. But at the same time, only time can teach you what you just said, you know, it can teach you to unlatch. And also, what wonderful, brilliant things to have learnt and to have learnt them early and to have within you. To be a hustler, beautifully scramble. It's not like you're scrambling in utter, awful, affecting chaos. Like you're scrambling.
Is
brilliant for the rest of us. Like we're enjoying the ride.
I love scrambling. You know? I'm happiest when I'm improvising. And I find life very hard when I know exactly what I've got to do and it's all mapped out in front of me. And it's all achievable. And that's the point when I lose interest. I will then make myself a scrambling kind of a situation, I think, in order to get that high.
I try to sometimes see life visually and it does always come back down to balance. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm overthinking one thing or the other, like I really need to learn calm and patience and all of that lovely kind of meditative, brilliant Buddhist stuff. And then there's another part of me that's wanting to escape and disco dance and cover myself in glitter and scream and come up with something completely different to what I thought the day before through conversation and art and rambunctiousness and rebellion, you know. So this beautiful discovery for me, I think essentially is being able to healthfully, safely, joyfully, or even contemplatively pendulum swing between the different extremes of ourselves.
Yeah.
And it just comes back to balance. Like, how wonderful to be able to learn the art of scrambling and the art of patience and time and solitude. Like, that's a pretty good course for a life, I think.
Definitely. And there's like time for both. Well, I wanna talk, because actually, like, you're clearly like a really sociable person that is excited by working with other people and by the kind of ideas that bounce around when you're in company. And I wanted to talk to you about your lockdown experience, because I gather you were like quite alone at the beginning of that.
Yes. So lockdown one, the big lockdown.
What number are we on now? I don't even know.
I don't know what anything is anymore. I've just been in isolation because I had, you know what, I don't want to say the word.
Oh, man, yeah.
I'm fine. I'm very grateful that I'm fine. And yeah, I was writing about it last night and I was calling it the New Year ground down. So I felt like I had to just like do some grounding. But I refuse to call it a lockdown or isolation or just all of these really authoritative words that just make my toes curl. But when we were first getting our mouth around the words and the notion of lockdown, so that must have been from mid-March 2020, and I had just had my birthday, because my birthday's on the 19th of March, and it was one of the most profound times of my life. I've had really profound moments in my life.
Yeah.
But this one was not so shiny. It was actually kind of a bit scary and moody, and it wasn't so dazzling in terms of the profound. Yeah. It was a moment to dig into myself and work out what would be right for me to do.
So were you still in Margate at this point, or?
So it's all very complicated. Thanks for letting me bore you on this. But I was mostly living in a rented room at two of my lovely friends' house in East London, just off Broadway Market. And it was a great pad. It was the bachelorette dream. It was near everything fun and cool. And it was reminding me of my old stomping grounds, which was East London, having moved to the seaside as part of a kind of exodus, which I think happened 6 years previously. And I had been living in Margate, but I'd always been nomadic in my approach. So I was doing loads of traveling up until that moment, making a Radio 4 program called The Sound Odyssey, which was all over the world, recorded everywhere from Colombia to Ethiopia.
Wow.
And I was very much in a flow, but very, like you say, like a hustling one. Like, I was taking myself everywhere. I'd have to go and do an event in London, and then I would try and section off periods of time at my place in Margate. So I still had a base in Margate, but I had this room in London, and I was actually spending more time in London because I was in the middle of, which I can't be bothered to go into, even though it's sad, and I appreciate like sympathy, but I had a neighbour dispute happening at my place in Margate as well, just to add to this very frenetic lifestyle anyway. And that was taking up the amount of time that a full-time job would. There were solicitors involved, and I was getting emails multiple times a day, if not phone calls, from somebody who moved into the flat below me and really took a real disliking to me personally and started accusing me of all, like, it got madder and madder and madder over the course of actually nearly 2 years, which I couldn't believe when I got out of it all, because I had sort of just batted it off because I was so busy. I was just like, I'll sort this out. Anyway, it was really, 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 really weird. And I felt safer in London at this particular point, despite having a place in Margate.
Right.
Financially, everything was a clusterfuck, pardon my friend. I was trying to get out of this situation of my Margate base. I was paying for a really expensive London rented room. Right. It was really hardcore. And apologies, like, this is a warning for some, because it is particularly hard to hear. I had lost a friend of mine unexpectedly, who had decided to end their own life. And she was a hugely public figure. So I was in a public mourning for Caroline Flack, who had been a personal friend of mine, too. So everything at once was a tangle of the hardest things that you might have to deal with.
Yeah.
And I was a single woman in my 30s, really trying to pride myself on being robust, optimistic, secure, etc., safe, happy. And I was imploding. Really, really difficult. And then suddenly a global pandemic was looming.
Which was exactly what you needed at that moment, presumably, yeah.
It was just surreal. I was wondering whether I was in a dream. You know, when you get really sad and you don't really feel like you're on the planet anyway.
You
just sort of maneuver from room to room or talk to people, but you don't really feel connected. That had been going on for quite a while. And then I was also scrambling, let's say, to try and claw back like good stuff. Like I was going to quite hardcore therapy for the first time. I promised my friends that I would consider taking medication. I was really trying. I was really thinking, okay, this is something that's going to have to be addressed. Like I have to create a framework because I'm in trouble. Like this is hard. And then this thing started to be talked about all the time. And it's just really surreal, if I'm honest. It was so surreal. I was just like, okay. Right, so I've got all this shit going on with myself, but this is now this thing that's about to affect the whole world. And I'm really sensitive as well. I could feel that it was going to be huge.
Yeah.
Which is another reason I think that I was feeling so disorientated.
It's that impending doom thing, isn't it? I remember that time and when it was coming.
As a human species, I think, things were getting too full and fast and, you know, all these kind of odd or negative or harsh behaviours that were happening, like, around me, sometimes involving me and sometimes not, but, like, my neighbour being so mean and horrible and all of these things that were happening. I do sort of see somehow we may be connected to this kind of impending doom kind of core, you know?
It's that time when it's those moments when you feel like everything, you're at the centre of this, I don't know, like eye of the storm and everything's happening to you. And it feels, it's a very particular feeling.
Weather is a really good way of making it into the metaphor that I need, I think. But being in an eye of a storm, but feeling like I humankind was in the storm. It wasn't just me, you know?
Yeah.
Was a really weird time, I'm not going to lie. And I don't want to be overindulgent either, so I don't all like overdo it in terms of it all being about me, because I think that there was a feeling in the air. I just do. That's just like a theory that I have. And I also don't want to be like too doomy. Like I don't want to be like low. Like there were so many hard things happening. But all I wanted, in the way that I am, you know, like always trying to jump for the sunshine, like searching for it, was to find the ropes and the vines I needed to grab on to like see me through. And then the universe kind of asked everybody to do that. But in their own way, everyone was suddenly presented with this time to reflect and to grapple with our own morals as to what was right or wrong, to search for genuine beauty in confinement, get in touch with our bodies as to how we prepared to eat our way through a lockdown, or how we were going to express empathy for the truly vulnerable people in the world and in our society. And it was just an absolute, you couldn't,
there's no word for it, is there?
Whoa.
Yeah.
And And personally, it presented an opening of looking after myself. Mm. Truly, like utterly, properly looking after myself, because I was so low anyway.
Yeah.
And it was literally in my dreams. My dream said to me, like, get to the sea. You can't.
My dreams always say that to me.
Yeah. Like the night after my birthday, I pretty much cried my way through my birthday in a kind of like trying to watch a wistful film crying. Like I'd also created a crown from eucalyptus from a beautiful bunch of flowers that someone had sent me, and wore my favorite designer, Mary Benson, in a velvet dress. And so it was, I tried to make it an event. It wasn't like wrapped up in bed crying, but that was on the 19th of March, 2020. I was so grief stricken for everything that had happened with Caroline. And I was just so kind of sad and upset. But I also tried to sort of like make that moment poetic or something. I don't know. Like, and I kept dreaming about the sea, and then I thought, okay, I have to go. So I searched online for Airbnbs. I don't know if I should be saying all of this, but I was looking for a place that would be by the sea that wasn't the place that I owned, because I didn't feel safe there because of the neighbor dispute. And I hardly had any money. I had like just a bit of money from a job that was not supposed to be used on staying by the sea during a lockdown, during a pandemic.
But you had to live somewhere.
Yeah, but it's really weird because I had a base in Margate, but honestly, I wasn't safe with that person.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like that was safe. I mean, that's, you know, that's not a choice, is it? You can't lock yourself down in a building where somebody is being like actively menacing.
Actually making jokes about you putting your head in the oven. It's just not all right.
It's not okay.
So no. I couldn't go there. And then I had this beautiful pad in London, but it was too small and it wasn't right. I couldn't see my grief dissipating or my lowness or the things, like a lot of past traumas were coming up. And I just thought, I can't do that in this small place, like in the city. So gosh, I'm lucky to be in this position, but it also feels very mad and dramatic, but I'm going to go somewhere else. So I found this place that was really unique, and it was an old shop built into a cliff in Ramsgate. So it was only down the road to my Margate place. Which felt good, actually. And I thought, I will sort that situation out when I have some time. And I tried to sell it 3 times, and each time the sale had been sabotaged because of this person. And I was writing my book, which I'm still writing, and I emailed the owner and I said, I've only got this amount of money, not the usual amount of money that it would be to book this place for a month. But would you accept it? Because it's seeming that there's not going to be much tourism in the coming weeks. Yeah. And can I write my book? And then I got a cap masked up just before lockdown because I wanted to be in like have a screen between myself and the driver, packed my stuff for 3 hours and went to live in a cliff. In like a sort of, it's this sort of really unique property that's been built in a cliff.
So presumably you had like, you know, that can be quite bleak. I mean, it can be very beautiful, but when the sea is raging.
Yeah.
What was it like being in solitude in a place like that?
It was absolutely astonishingly beautiful.
Mm.
It was amazing. And it's exactly what I needed. I'm actually feeling emotional talking about it because I haven't really talked about it for ages, because so many other big things have happened that have been beautiful and lovely. And my luck kind of did come after praying for it. Mm. But yeah, it was amazing. I turned up. I was on a coastline that I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
I knew that there were people close that were my people, my tribe. So I didn't feel completely alone. I thought it was important to put myself out there in terms of introducing myself to neighbours that seemed open and friendly and said that, you know, I'm here on my own, writing my book. I know there's a lockdown is about to happen, so I'm not expecting for us to be having parties, but just so that you know that I'm next door. And they were really receptive and beautiful and kind. And then the journey just started, this kind of twisted adventure of wow. learning to grieve and keying into myself. Is that the right? I don't know what the right way to describe it is, but like...
Yeah, sinking down, I guess.
Yeah. And like yeah. just becoming so kind of inwards because
I mean, it's almost monastic, isn't it? I think it's like a kind of living in a cell in an abbey somewhere in the 14th century or something.
I mean, I was lucky because it was so beautiful. So I loved the raging sea at night. The first few nights I couldn't really sleep. I just thought, oh, well, I've got loads of nights to sleep. I've got days to sleep. I've got loads of time to sleep. Like, we're going to be locked down for a while. So if I can't sleep now, don't panic. And I was just remember saying to myself, I was like, just listen to the sea. Like, you know that the sea is your friend, or it speaks to you at least, or it kind of, it's so brilliantly changeable and ferocious and big that it puts things into perspective. And this isn't just about me. And then my imagination got me through, which it does often anyway, but my imagination is so ridiculous and epic. And where I was geographically and how this house had been built overlooking the sea, I could open out doors from my bedroom. There was a freestanding bath. It was a really nice, special place to be. It wasn't particularly... bougie, but it was really unique.
It sounds wild. It sounds
it was quite wild. Yeah. It's really hard to explain, but it's very unique. And I opened up the doors so I could hear the sea, and I started swimming, which I do anyway, but I was going in the cold and sort of doing the hacker or something. Like, I had to be pretty much to myself. In fact, the amazing neighbours who lived a few doors down, who I reached out to and said, just so you know, I'm here on my own. Will I be okay, do you think? Is this a safe place and whatever? And they'd seen me like running across the beach, like literally sort of punching the air and screaming and preparing to get into the spring of water. And I got a text saying, we saw you. Not only did you swim, but you were doing some ritualistic dancing before you got here. And I loved it. The message just said, it was a beautiful friend called Wendy. They've become friends, but she said, we think you're really rock and roll. And I just
That's
thought,
brilliant.
Yeah, I am. And that was helping acclimatize to cold water and having that freedom of beach every day. I also thought about the art of reaching out being really important. I've sort of became a bit obsessed with it. I wanted to connect. I knew I was on my own, but I knew that it was so important to always stay connected, even though I was very emotionally vulnerable. I needed love and people. So I tried to show love and I tried to inhabit love.
I'm just taking a pause to let you know about my very exciting new Patreon feed. If you love the Wintering Sessions and would like to help it grow, you can now become a patron. Subscribers will get an exclusive monthly podcast in which I talk about the books, culture, and the news that are currently inspiring me. You'll also get the chance to submit questions to my guests in advance of recordings, and the answers will go into a special extended edition of the podcast that only patrons receive, and a day early too. Plus, you'll get discounts and early booking links to my courses and events. And your podcast will always be ad-free. If this sounds like your kind of thing, I have a special offer. The first 30 patrons will be able to join at a discounted rate of $3 a month for life. So do get in early and help to build the community from the foundations. Go to patreon.com/Catherine May or follow the link in my bio to subscribe. And please don't worry if this isn't for you. The regular version of the Wintering Sessions will still be free, and I really appreciate your listens. Now, back to the show.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
What did that do for you that time? I mean, did you... Oh, I don't know what I'm asking in lots of ways. I mean, did it make you more productive? But I don't mean productive as in like, you know, were you a good little agent of capitalism turning out, you know, lots of work and a book? But what I mean is like, what did it do to your creative self? What did it do to your pattern of living?
It was really unexpectedly pleasant because once you move through, I don't think it's rage, but almost outrage of the situation. And things that just aren't fair. Like, I got loads of work withdrawn. So I lost out on loads of planned money. And some of it felt really distasteful, let's say, in terms of the decisions that big organizations were making, where I clearly wasn't a priority. Firstly, I can't like sit in that outrage for too long because it's not like I don't expect certain spaces to let me down and not prioritize me. So again, you just have to like, I don't know why I was talking about like this as a sort of life lesson for us all, but I had to. I had to choose where to put my energy and I could have just been stuck in a real negative space, but I chose the opposite. I see it as a learning. Like I chose to learn to move through grief.
Yeah. And so many different griefs at once, you know, not just one grief, but the loss of a friend, the loss of like a home and a, you know, the whole vision that comes with a, with losing a home, you know, you lose that too. The loss of work, the loss of like the, well, we all went through that loss of independence in a lockdown that felt so like violent, actually.
Yeah.
Even though we were submitting to it willingly. Yeah. It's a lot of loss in one go.
But I learned the motions of it in order to stay afloat.
Yeah.
We all, like you say, have had to deal with something. I think violent is a good word. But what certain elements of my career or my life have been through or represent up until now was very much being controlled by like the puppets of this kind of quite toxic capitalism, this patriarchal thinking, the normalization of perfectionism, et cetera, all of the stuff that we're working through now, I think, quite openly.
Yeah. Well, and it began during that time, didn't it? I mean,
it began during that time in terms of unpicking it. But in terms of the effects of all of those things, being a woman, being Black, growing up in the UK, having dealt with all the things I have anyway, I've had to deal with that violence, like always. So it actually provided space and time to learn how to protect myself from that, because actually I'm in an industry that never gives you that. Doesn't give you the time to think about whether saying yes to that particular campaign is going to make your back ache because it feels really uncomfortable, you know? Yeah. It doesn't give you the opportunity to turn everything off and say, I choose to partake in an alternative practice for 5 days straight or whatever. Like, it, that subject's so broad. But, you know, like, doing stuff, sure. It doesn't let you. Like, I don't work in a role where you're allowed to turn off. And societally, we can understand that more, all of us. It's much more resonant because we are always switched on to so many different things. But that I was before everybody else was too, because I chose to do a job that is associated with kind of like a sense of kind of public ownership or discussion or.
Well, and massive uncertainty as well. You know, like those careers can just disappear in an instant if you fall out of favour. And it's kind of quite a terrifying world to work in, I think, in some ways.
It's absolutely insane. It's really, really a weird world, but it's very alluring, particularly when you're young, and it can take you in amazing places and connect you to, you know, some of the greatest thinkers on the planet. Like, or you can earn enough money to travel and to fill your house with things that make your heart sing. You know, there's all these opportunities. Opportunity is important to focus on, and there are so many opportunities within the industry side of my world as well as the kind of artistic expression side, and it's very dazzling, but it's very full on. And it will not nurture or protect me or anything that I've dealt with as a human being, so I had to learn how to do that myself. Because otherwise, there's many, 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 many different, also rigorously active grafting souls that will lead you in all sorts of different directions. And everyone's got their own prerogative, but you have to learn your path, like how to lay your path. Only you can really do that.
Yeah. So, like in the aftermath, when everything opened up again and life went kind of a bit back to normal, although it still isn't, but what did you it feels normal now, but as soon as I said that, I was like, this isn't normal, what am I talking about? I'm still sticking a cotton wool stick, like, you know, 5 inches up my nose every 2 days, like, that's not normal. But I can do it without blinking now, which I think is quite impressive. But
we're really tough.
Yeah.
You know, we can absolutely do this. We can get through stuff. We really can. It's just about being sort of gentle at the right times and then tough at the other. It's really weird.
It's knowing when to soften. But what have you brought from that time into your life now? How have you been permanently changed by it? And what bits did you leave behind in that little house in the cliff?
What a time. I started to have fun. I started to, you mentioned creatively what it did for me. And actually what it did for me was to move on from despair, let's say, or all that kind of stuff. Outrage to playtime.
That's great.
And not only was I doing my dancing on the beach and then swimming, I was activated in a really special way. Like, politically, the tides were changing, like the resurgence of Black Lives Matter was so visceral. It opened up a space to talk and to find language about things that essentially have been oppressive for so long. And I was like going with that, and it allowed me to believe in myself as a creative. I really do believe in myself as somebody that's like meant to talk. I want to be part of movement. So every Tuesday was chatting to a friend of mine, Lola, on Instagram Live. That became really weird. It became like a talk show that we did. But it was just a way of connecting at first. She asked me if I wanted to do it. She's a journalist and a writer, and she's British and is based in New York and has been for many years. So we would just talk every Tuesday lunch.
Just have a chat.
And compare notes from being solo lockdown, single women, but with the Atlantic in between us, which was really fun. and then became a bit more serious at points because of the world around us. But
yeah, there was such a lot to take seriously at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was an experimentation in connection, that particular chat, and we'd get quite a few people watching every reel. Like, this is kind of cool. And I really felt activated in the moment. I didn't write loads of my book, because that felt very like
nobody wrote loads of their book during lockdown. Well, don't worry about did. It. I didn't either.
Some people did, but I did write, and I was active on Patreon, and I've been growing my page, and felt really responsive to day to day feelings and wanting to write them down and create from it. And I also started my own radio show, which I'm really proud of. And that was one of those things, you know, when like proper artists talk about how things come through them, or I've heard writers talk about it as well, where they just feel like they just are doing something, but they don't even have to think about it too much.
You just channel stuff, yeah.
I knew that I needed to broadcast. I was gutted that I couldn't do like the live radio that I'm used to. So I just created my own, and I brought together people that I thought might help me, and I self-funded it, did a completely independent show every Wednesday night between 9 and 11, and put together the playlist gleefully, spoke to writers all around the world and got them to read live on air, had conversations with people from motivational speakers in Washington to a psychotherapist who's like on the front line in Amsterdam, to a Scottish poet called Biddy Letford, who was on lockdown and stuck in Thailand. Like, it was amazing. And that was just down in a bunker where I was socially distanced from two tech people and in a nightclub in Margate that used to host my club night when I was living there, called Gems Jams. And suddenly we turned it into a radio station, and it was... It was so, again, an experiment in connection, and one that was so fulfilling.
I just love that. Obviously we can't talk about the pandemic without talking about how hard it was and how awful it was for loads of people. But at the same time, what I'm hearing over and over again is like people doing stuff from the gut, you know, like, I have to do this. I have to communicate this. I have to make this. But also finding new ways to do it, because I bet you wouldn't have considered like launching your own completely independent radio show before then.
I have a very overactive mind. I would think about it.
I would have thought about it all the time.
But the big difference for me is I absolutely wouldn't have the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't, because I'll be pulled in different directions for things that are deemed more important, more financially feasible. Have so many, you know, companies or bosses attached that mean that I don't have the time for that freedom, that play, that DIY, like momentum, and that gut thing that you described. I live by mine. I've had it always, but it's definitely been really resonant over the past couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've needed it, because there's no roadmap, and you've got to follow something. And actually, I think a lot of people have tuned back into those gut instincts that they've been suppressing for a very long time. And that's good, right?
It's so nice. I'm really relieved for that. There's so many things that have broken my heart, but then there's also been so many ingredients to like mend bits of it as well. And that's one of them. People being softer, people falling in love with nature.
Yeah.
People understanding my tribal dance before I get in the sea.
I wish you had a video of that.
It can be recreated anytime.
I think you should start like a club, and we'll all get together and do a tribal dance before a swim. Like, I mean, I just need you to teach me this skill. I swim, but I don't dance first.
Honestly, it's quite weird. It's just like punching the air and like moving your
bottom. Sounds beautiful. It sounds like
My boyfriend has been subjected to it on a regular basis. But Nightwaves is the name of the radio show, and it's on Mixcloud, and there are 20 shows there that I just think are so special. So if anybody listening wants to delve into what that feeling of solitude and grief and sea and journey was like, then you can actually, there was a documentation of it.
It's just lovely. And that's how this podcast started as well. Like, you know, similar instinct. Like I wanted to talk to people. I wanted to make contact with other writers and talk about this moment and other moments that were like it, and just to produce something in this, in that kind of free floating time when you just weren't sure what was going to happen next and couldn't plan. And I, you know, I still feel like we can't plan. And I think that might be quite good for us in lots of ways, actually.
Yes. Societally, we've become so entrenched in planning and being sensible. And,
yeah.
But nobody is doing the right thing, like the right thing, you know, like with a capital T. Like, it's really hard to know what it is, especially when even our actual government, I mean, I don't even, again, words that I don't really like to say, are not posing as authoritative, solid,
they're not being the grown-ups.
Community care, like thinking in any particular way, like in terms of doing the right thing or setting the right rules and boundaries. So therefore, I mean this metaphorically rather than literally like running into the streets naked if you're on isolation or something. Like, don't be ridiculous, but like...
It's worth pointing out.
I mean, laugh about that as an idea, but like, it's this much, but as a sort of broader, as a bigger picture, like flowing with the moment and being in the moment and being present is a gift, I think, that this pandemic has given us. And creatively, that's so nice. I'm glad that you felt moved to talk to people and that people are getting something from that, because connection is, I think I found, one of the most important things. In fact, there's a brilliant essay on connection called On Connection, written by Kay Tempest. I don't know if you've come across it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's extraordinary. And I read it during lockdown, actually.
Yeah, me too. And I interviewed Kay for Nightwaves. I had a feature where I would ask artists to take me on a trip and to delve into a kind of transcendental journey. And if they could take me anywhere in the world, whilst we all yearned for travel, where would they take me? And Kay took me to Brazil on a boat.
Oh, wow.
And we had the most biblical almost conversation that can be listened as a standalone on my Mixcloud channel or part of the show, which we edited it to be part of too. And I just felt like as though Kay is a prophet of our modern times and is such an important voice. And On Connection actually came out after our conversation. And I've been a fan of Kay's for a long time. But the summing up of it and the published essay on how important connection and writing and creativity actually is, I think is a must read.
It really is. I would recommend it to anyone. And actually, I must try and get Kay on the podcast. That would be like the biggest coup in the world, I think.
Definitely. They're love to talk to them. Yeah. And approach to language and expression is a real, real, again, another gift for us all in these current unsteadying times.
Oh, well, look, I there's so much more I'd like to ask you, but I am conscious of your time and also the listeners, because I think you and I could just talk on this in this vein for like 5 hours and we'd still be really happy.
Well, the quick sum up, because there's loads of different like things that happen.
I love that you sum up. This is great. This is just the professionalism is. Like, I'm going to sum up now.
But just in terms of, it's quite important to say that though the doldrums were very real, times were really hard at the beginning of 2020, and the lockdown was not only like profoundly creative, etc., and fun to dance on the beach, there were moments of serious sadness and thought. Was falling in love. I fell in love as soon as...
This is an unexpected twist at the end. What?
This is mad. As soon as we were allowed to actually see people again, somebody came back into my life that I hadn't seen since 2018 on a mountain in Malawi, in Africa. And at the time, he owned an off-grid eco lodge. And I thought he was absolutely gorgeous. But I did think to try and be sensible, in the sense that he lived in Malawi. And in 2020, he found his way back to the UK. And we have been inseparable ever since.
Oh, that's amazing. And so, wow, like unexpected outcomes.
Honestly, 2020 was a very, very strange and pivotal year, but it definitely changed my life, like hugely in ways. I think a lot of people know that 2020 changed their lives, but a lot of it's quite esoteric and perhaps nuanced as to how. Yeah.
You've got something really concrete, haven't you?
Yeah, like, I went on my own into a cliff and I came out and I found the love of my life. Like, it's just insane.
It's like a fairy story.
I thought I would like emerge a bitter troll, and actually all the kimono wearing, which I had done, which I did a lot of, by the way, as well. That was another very important part. I wore the silk peach kimono nearly every day.
That's a great way to live your life.
Somehow kind of moved me in the direction of really trying to cultivate like the epitome of fabulousness. And I keep trying to dance in that direction ever since.
It's just so perfect. And I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy that that could emerge from this time of like retreat. And it's like you kind of kindle this fire that's going to take you into the next place in your life, I think.
Yeah, it's absolutely bananas. Like, it's bonkers. And then since I've moved to Scotland,
yes,
where we both have heritage, and it's all been very, I mean, one day I'll write it all down, I don't know. I'm just living it at the moment. I'm still in it. It's still flabbergasting me, and I'm still gutted by the many losses and all the injustice in the world, and I'm activated and poised to talk about all of those things. And I'm also find it really important to try and live by example in terms of believing in healing and believing in doing the inner work, and just sort of really like cultivating like who you are and what makes you feel good, and then good things come.
Mm. Gemma, thank you so much. It's just been amazing to talk. And I just kind of want to book you in for next week and we'll carry the story on.
You just we'll just need to listen, honestly, listen to Nightwave.
I am totally going to. It sounds
you've
incredible.
You've got music as well to break up the big conversation.
I don't know if I'm emotionally ready, you know.
It's not all really deep. It's that balance search. It's like the light and the shade constantly.
That sounds amazing. Oh, well, I mean, I know that you've got like legions of devoted fans anyway, but I think when you keep innovating like this, it's so exciting. Like, you don't need to do this when you've got a profile like yours, but actually I just love that you do, because you know, you're interested in it and you want to explore stuff.
I do need to do it. I am progress led always. I absolutely do need to do it. I think there's a lot of things in this world that need changing. And I absolutely need to constantly ask myself the questions as to like whether my energy is in the right space, and innovation is completely imperative to that.
Yeah.
And also I would say, like, reflecting that out there to anybody listening, you know, people have most likely found this through Patreon, for example, which I think is a really interesting independent platform. And I really rate and respect like those who are seeking out content for themselves on it. So
yeah,
bravo, you know, high five, big up. And we all can continue to innovate in terms of what we consume, where we spend our money, how we make our money, who we spend our time with, how we get over like any of the past that doesn't feel right. All of these things, all of these innovations, like from personal to professional to kind of public and environmental, all of these things, we all can do it.
Yeah.
There are so many pioneers and avenues of like freedom, goodness, a better future for the next generation. So we're doing it by listening to this and going on Patreon and making and connecting. Yeah. But it doesn't stop, and it doesn't stop at people with big voices. It's all of us.
But, you know, it's such an important point to live by, isn't it? That you get to choose where you put your time, money and attention. That, you know, don't let other people choose those things for you. You make those choices and you make them positive.
If you can, you know, and it's also all right for it to feel really hard. But know that you're not on your own and that there's some really good stuff out there.
There's some really good stuff out there.
Love is lovely. Sea swimming is great.
Yes.
Moving house is stressful whilst it's stressful, and then it can sometimes be wonderful. You know, cutting cords of toxic people is always a little bit bad, and then you feel great. Like all of these things, it's worth it.
Frosty mornings give me life. Yeah.
Oh, I've been in isolation. It's my freedom day tomorrow.
Happy freedom day for tomorrow.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much,
Catherine. You've been really, really, really open and really allowed me to have a big old meaty chat, and I've talked about things I haven't talked about in ages.
I love chats like that. I don't see the point in any other kind of chat, you know?
Oh, it's kind of crazy to reflect and emotional, but it's also, I'm quite proud of myself.
You should be. Oh my God, you should be.
And I think we should all be proud of ourselves.
Yes. We have all come through a lot this year. A lot. I'm back out of my bath now. I'm as pink as a lobster. I considered recording you a podcast segment in which I was in the bath, but I felt like naked podcasting was a bit too weird. And also I was worried about my phone, very sensibly given how clumsy I am. I'd have drowned my phone in moments. I think they're waterproof now, thank goodness, but even so. It's funny how we have to talk about this stuff, isn't it? Like how we take care of ourselves. It's part of my resistance that I talk about quite a lot to looking busy for the sake of it, I think. I do everything I can, and I don't always succeed, not to be busy unnecessarily and not to say I'm busy when I'm asked. That's like my reflex for the whole of my life, to reply to the question, how are you? Oh, busy. Busy is not the answer to how are you. You can be good busy. You can be terrible busy. But you can also be not busy. I've had some really grimly busy times in my life over the last few years. Some impossibly busy times where I'm busy because there are too many pressures crushing me from every direction. And I'm trying really hard to learn not to be busy and to say, I have enough. I have enough to live on at the moment. Haven't always, you know. I have enough work. I don't need to fill my days unnecessarily. Anyway, that's a long way round of saying that I just loved what Gemma told us about how she took care of herself when everything felt like it was getting lost. That fear of being nothing, that fear of not having a home, of not having anywhere to settle or belong, and the things you might do in the face of that. I just thought it was such a beautiful story. I hope you enjoyed it too. And I wish you many hot baths or whatever the thing is that soothes you. Not everyone likes hot baths. Not everyone can have hot baths. But they're my thing for now. Until the day that they can't prize me into them anymore, and then I'll have to find another thing, damn it. Anyway, thank you for listening. I wanted to say a huge thank you to my Patreons, or my patrons, I still don't know what to call them. They're really lovely though, for like jumping in and supporting this podcast. What that means is that I don't have to stop this season in a couple of episodes as I would have done without my Patreons. I still don't cover all the podcast expenses from what they bring, but it really helps. It means that I can do more and I can do it in a kind of relaxed way. It's making a lot possible, and I'm so grateful for it. It's just so wonderful to have partners in crime. I'm about to record a bonus episode where I answer loads of their questions, and I just can't imagine anything much more fun, to be honest. I hope they find it fun in return. But yeah, it's a joy, so thank you. And if you'd like to support the podcast, please consider it. At least take a look around. It's at patreon.com/Catherine May. But if you can't do that, that's fine.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Into. I always used to worry such a lot when I heard this stuff, when I didn't have any money in my pocket, and think, oh, I can't help. I'm not valued. You are. You really are. I love it that you all listen, so thank you. And thank you to Gemma, to my producer buddy, who untangles all these crazy ramblings about being in the bath. I don't know what he thinks of it. It's probably best I don't. And thanks to Megan, who looks after the Patreons so beautifully, and me. It's another little artifact of my self-care that I never thought I deserved. And now I realise I needed to cope without burning myself out. Anyway, I'll see you all next time. With more brilliant guests. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.